Okay, thank you, Matt. Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, July 20th, 2020, 1:03 p.m. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashus, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. This is a work session on case number PU-19-310. We also have John Hsu from staff, as well as Jerry Lean from staff. So there are five of us that will be visiting about the case. And I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman?
I also do not have any opening comments.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Nor do I.
Okay, well, I'll just dive right into it. Jack, did you have anything you wanted to open, or can I just dive in and start?
Feel free to start, Commissioner.
Okay. So one of the documents I'm going to refer to the most would be one that Victor put together. And he has on his testimony a wide range of potential savings, from as little as $3,000 to as much as $4.3 million. And then he said the likely scenario in comparison to market energy price purchases in lieu of this PPA would be in the $1 to $1.5 million range for North Dakota customers. But as I've been going through this, I have other questions and thoughts on it. And Jack, maybe the first one you can help me out with. Did they have the opportunity to renegotiate the PPA, or is the current owner just looking to divest themselves of the facility and they aren't going down that road regardless?
Mr. Chairman, I guess that's something that I don't recall from any of the testimony that was really provided. To the extent that they attempted to renegotiate that, that's generally something we don't dive too deep into.
Right.
Okay. Didn't that come up in the hearing? Thought it did. I don't remember the answer, but I thought that came up in the hearing.
Either it was in the company's testimony or in the hearing, I think, but I had gotten the impression that the choice between a new PPA, whether it was with this or, you know, you could go out and maybe find a different one, mm-hmm. if that was your direction, that ownership was would provide the most savings over the period of time compared to a PPA at the going rate, because it seems to me that came up in the discussion of the company had originally just made the comparison, I think, between a PPA as opposed to mm-hmm. purchasing this, and then advocacy staff said the comparison should be buying on the market as well.
Right.
And then they recalculated things. But I thought in that initial part that whether it was this PPA or a different PPA, that ownership was the better option.
Sure.
That's how I recall it.
I guess to the extent that they went in depth, and I'm not sure if I really recall that how far we went into it.
Okay.
I know the current PPA does term, or it ends in 2026, and so I guess my recollection is I don't recollect whether it was a continuation of that one or was a new PPA negotiation off the repowered facility.
You know, one thing the company has said repeatedly, even going back to some of the previous cases, they don't need the capacity until I think it's 2025, 2026.
Mm-hmm. Bless you.
Excuse me.
So they don't need the capacity, but this is to replace, I guess, existing generation with the least costly alternative, is the argument they're making. But the one thing that isn't in the mix that I, to my knowledge, that I haven't seen, every time something like this is brought into the mix, in terms of ownership in particular, it also helps support an early earlier retirement of the existing coal facilities that are not fully depreciated out, that there's going to be a bill to pay, so to speak, for ratepayers when those facilities are retired. That's not a part of the calculation that I've looked everywhere, and it's just not a part of the calculation. I don't know if it's just, you know, comparison to this generation, if it's how significant it is, but every time one of these comes online or is brought into the mix, arguably certainly supports earlier retirement of existing facilities that ratepayers are still paying for, and there would still be an unpaid balance if they retired early that then ratepayers would also have to pick up. So when you layer that in along with a low-end savings of only $3,000, or even the likely scenario of $1 million, how do we know those don't offset and cancel each other out? And if that's the case, why not wait until the next rate case to make a determination on whether or not this is or isn't prudent?
Imagine some of those questions would be answered in the context of this facility within the integrated resource plan, because I would imagine that that is a place where that would be discussed. Because I believe their current integrated resource plan does discuss the early retirement of certain coal facilities. And they model it accordingly.
Yep. Jerry?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about capacity and energy here. Mm-hmm. And first of all, because it's a wind facility, the capacity factor is not very high. They don't get a lot of capacity credit for it. And I don't know to what extent they even entered that into their calculations, but the real savings is that the wind energy right now is cheaper to run than the coal plant. Actually, there's no running costs. You turn it on and the wind blows and there's no fuel. And so I think that's where they're getting their savings numbers from, which was quite a spread. But I think that depends on the alternative costs, what that's going to be, and you don't really know at this point. More than likely, market energy in MISO is going to stay low. We could see higher energy if resources get tighter.
What are your thoughts on this? Because we keep hearing that renewable resources are becoming increasingly more efficient, producing energy at a lower cost, and we're using a baseline that almost seems outdated in terms of market purchases. So if there's such a good source of cheap power, and the other thing I haven't even touched on, what is this doing to in terms of congestion? I know this resource exists regardless. But overall, you've got cost on the early retirement side. We know we've got a lot of costs coming down the road eventually on the transmission side. And does this just enable, how do we say no to that later on when a company comes to us, whether it's this company or another company, and they say, okay, we've got an early retirement, we want recovery on the undepreciated balance, we've got additional transmission costs now, and we want recovery on that, and if we've said yes, yes, yes along the way to the resource additions, how do we then say no to the first two?
Well, first of all, I don't know what we're going to see for transmission costs. MISO is up in the air right now in their planning situation too, and one of the problems that we've got in this area is a queue for new generation, and the lines are full. Sooner or later, we're going to need more transmission lines. And so it's up in the air right now. Who's going to pay for those? And, you know, I personally would like to see some kind of a new, something like an MVP setup where we spread those costs around, because they're really benefiting people in the East that don't have wind, and they want wind. And so I'm hoping we can get something that everybody pays on that, like we did with MVPs. But I'm afraid that what's going to happen is that we're going to consider congestion. They're going to okay these new interconnection agreements, and we're going to fill up the lines more, and they're going to get congested, and then they're going to start wanting to do MEP projects to relieve the congestion, and we'll end up paying a good share of those MEP projects. So that we're kind of getting off the track here, but it's related. And in this particular case, the project's up and running already. And I don't really see what there's much transmission expense associated with it. I think the real dilemma was whether to continue their existing PPA with this thing. I can't remember how long it was, 2025 or something like that, or to buy it after they get it repowered. And they're asking to buy it after the repower for prudence, for determination of prudence on that. And their numbers and staff's numbers too showed that it was cheaper for them to own this thing. And remember, ownership also gives you the projects in your portfolio after the expiration of the agreement too. So there's an added benefit. And I heard from MISO here last week that their first quarter LMP number is driven largely by wind and natural gas. Was only 1.8 cents per kilowatt hour, which is the lowest it's ever been. So,
say that again, Jerry. That's MISO's LMP?
What I understand is that they ran their spring this year average LMP price of 1.8 cents per kilowatt hour, which would be $18 a megawatt hour.
Wow.
And yeah, that's less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour for wholesale power. That's unheard of. I mean, so we don't know what's going to happen with the market prices either. But it's pretty hard to argue to keep coal plants open when it costs more money than that to run them when in must-run situations. So,
I'll remind you of the arguments when it's really hot this summer and the wind's not blowing.
I am not an advocate of closing down these coal plants at all.
I know that.
Yeah, we've got big investments in there, and I don't like the idea of losing it.
I think along with your point, although there's not really any evidence to my concern, so I don't really know where to take it, but you had mentioned them not really needing it now, but for later on. One of the things that concerns me is because of the amount of time I've been in politics, you know, when this talk about, oh, well, the subsidies for wind are ceasing. I mean, we've been talking about that for decades. They're not ceasing, they're growing. and we might as well kind of accept it, really. And so it kind of makes me wonder when we jump on because something seems like a good deal, even though we don't need it right now, but geez, we got to take advantage of this good deal. Well, by the time it's really needed, I don't know, what's the subsidy for wind going to be then? You know, what if it seems unimaginable, but 15 years ago I thought it was unimaginable we were still going to be subsidizing these things at all in 2020. What if the subsidy for wind is $35 or $40 a megawatt? Then they'll be wanting to shut this down to build another new one because can't afford to run this one for these PTCs. So I guess I get a little frustrated anytime we're adding things so far in advance of needing them. But there's no real evidence here to suggest that anything that extraordinary is going to happen. And we know they're shutting down some plants, and this probably will be needed in a relatively short period of time. So,
if I might just jump in here for a second, I think it's important to emphasize that need is really not an issue in this. This is an energy resource. It's not a capacity resource. So it's not what it replaces higher cost energy. So the only need there is the need to save money is what the argument is. And I agree with you guys on a lot of different levels on concerns for transmission upgrades and displacing coal and all of those concerns. But this is the hard part about our job, is that we get these things in a silo, and those aren't issues on this particular thing. That's why I will remind you I've been advocating for more of an integrated resource plan with Xcel, that we can look at these things in total, in the plan in total. Because when you get them individually, then you're really just looking at the factors at hand for this and not all the interplay with everything else. And right here, the question is, should they buy it or should they keep the original PPA and should they buy it after the repower or keep the original PPA? That's the question. Not all this other stuff. Yeah. All this other policy stuff is just kind of a distraction, quite honestly. So that's the question before us with this ADP.
Jerry, when you're finished speaking, would you make sure you mute your mic?
Sure.
Okay. Gives us a little feedback here. Thanks.
If I could, the issue of capacity with wind is not a primary driver. If you need capacity, you're going to have to build a CT or something, or buy the capacity from somebody. But if you put up a wind generator, the capacity value of that is very low. It does not pay for itself in capacity. It's always the energy savings. And I think that the good thing about this right now, about if they buy this, is, you know, these prices for energy are almost ridiculously low, and you get to lock them in for the life of those facilities by buying it.
Let me ask you this, Jerry. You know, when we talk about, the latest turbines that are more efficient, longer blades, more blades that do a better job of capturing the wind. I mean, these facilities have become more and more efficient at generating energy when the wind is blowing. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. We also know that there will, with the incentives that are out there, there will be continued development in this space. Companies all over are looking to continue putting up facilities. So isn't there an argument for it's going to be a target-rich environment in terms of having access as an energy company as a utility, a target-rich environment to enter into what could very easily be even better agreements, even just a few years down the road?
Well, they're repowering this thing now, which means that they are making it as best as they can. Maybe there will be improvements that come. There most certainly probably will be improvements that come, but at the time you do the best you can with it. And I don't know what their economics are behind their repowering, but we're starting to see that quite a bit, and they're improving the performance on the existing units.
Right, and that's happening across the country, that facilities are becoming more efficient, generating. Well, I guess they're still capped at what they can generate, but when you need power, or the market is looking for power, that facility can kick out more than it would otherwise. It just seems like when you look at 2025, 2026, to think that this is going to be better over a six-year period, a five, six-year period, than what might be available, or based on everything I keep hearing, will be available, feels like we're jumping the gun.
So if we don't do this, we keep the existing PPA?
Yes.
Well, Jerry, isn't this running through our rider right now? And so if it was an energy, if they ceased this energy purchase, would it not immediately cease running through the rider? Or am I mistaken about that?
I'm not sure how that's set up, but I believe it is. As a purchase power, it runs through the rider. Right. And first of all, they got a contract obligation, so they can't just cease. But when their contract expires and they do something else with this thing, then it would have to come out of the rider.
Right, unless the contract is renegotiated due to them purchasing it, due to cost recovery from Minnesota. So if that's the case, then they may, in that event, no longer have that PPA, since they do own it at that point in time, which I would imagine then would cease to run through the rider.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, we have a renewable rider, if I remember right, for NSP. And so if they purchase it up until the time that it gets moved into base rates, there's probably going to be a request for recovery in that renewable rider. And I'm trying to remember what they had for renewable rider at the moment. I have to look it up.
Jerry, and I think, and I apologize, I didn't get a chance to listen to the whole hearing again and get all the way through the pre-filed testimony, but my understanding is that if it weren't for the current PPA that was approved by the commission for cost recovery, this would not likely be a prudent resource addition.
Do
you agree with that?
Don't know on that one. I didn't look at the numbers for what their purchase prices are on the PPA. That's trade secret.
Sure.
The savings, though, you know, yeah, if you look at the very low end, the savings are pretty low.
Modest.
But if you look at the range and figure anywhere near the middle, the savings are definitely significant. And
the 1 to 1.5 million?
For North Dakota.
For North Dakota, sure.
Yeah.
Correct.
So what would the options be? What are the options? And what?
I saw some much bigger numbers than that, depending on what happens in the future here. Mm-hmm. I think I saw 70, 80 million total.
That's the overall system cost, not the North Dakota share.
The high end on North Dakota is 4.3 million. The low end was 3,000 over what length of time?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Savings are over what length of time?
25 years.
25 years. So if you divide, of course, if you were to divide the 3,000 by 25 years, you're talking $120 per year for North Dakota customers. Okay. This is not much. If you take the 1 to 1.5 million, well, 1 million at 25 years would be, what, $40,000 a year? And a third of that would be recognized by consumers-ish. So you're at, all at 14,000, I'll round up from the 13,333. We'll call it 14,000 for the year, divided by what's NSP's count, customer count, 95,000. Call it 100,000 customers. I mean, you're talking, I mean, this isn't going to change the utility bill. Some quick math. I'd have to look by more than a penny a month.
And part of the problem with this was when you're doing a comparison, what are you going to compare it to? And you know, staff argued that it should be compared against MISO energy prices. Right now, those prices are basement low. I don't know that they will stay that way. A lot of it is gas prices are so low. And the forecasts, I think, indicate that they should stay low. But, you know, we've seen that go differently before. So I don't know. I think there's value to locking in the energy price.
Okay, but again, on the mid-range scenario, I just kicked out the numbers. It's in that point 3 cents a month in terms of benefit, 3.3 cents in terms of benefit of $1 million in energy savings. 1.5 would be, you know, right around just shy of a nickel a month. So I compare that almost not. It's not that it isn't material when you look at the overall number, but customers aren't. I mean, it's not going to make or break a customer either way. And then the unknown is what the future holds.
And now I'm kind of making the counter to what I threw out earlier when we kind of ranged off topic some as far as need. But if we were to deny this, they're probably going to be buying energy on the market then, or something else anyway. And Jerry's right. And before I made the example of what if PTCs go way up, maybe there'll be something a lot better. But it could also be that oil and gas struggles and causing gas prices to go up, and that energy is not available at these kinds of prices, Jerry, in the future. And
sorry,
Jerry, could you mute, please? Thank you. And at that point, it will. This will have looked like a pretty good deal too. So,
I'm looking at the company's application and the factors that they highlight. The benefits of this is company's ownership and operation of the project reduces the cost relative to the PPA. It is they have these clean energy objectives, and the second argument is that any incremental generation from the repowered wind facility would displace, and this is only 100 megawatts, so it's not a lot, but would displace future generic new wind procurement, including the resource plan, that's likely going to be at a higher cost. So those are the two arguments that they lay out for why we should find this prudent. And I guess our advocacy staff didn't disagree with those.
Yes,
that I recall.
That's as I recall.
Victor's testimony was that this is a less bad scenario.
That's correct.
Not that this is a great scenario, it's a less bad scenario. The part that I really continue to struggle with, though, would be the inconsistency in terms of these types of resources are so efficient and costs are decreasing at a measurable rate. I mean, that's the argument. These are great resources and they're only getting cheaper. Mm-hmm. And then, but when we see something like this, and then the argument shifts to, and not what you said, but the overall argument is that, but it could cost a lot more down the road. Which is it?
Well, I hear them saying not even down the road as much as they've got these goals, they're going to pursue them, and it's either this or another one that's probably higher. Not, you know, so. I guess if they didn't have a PPA right now that they're locked into and that we're paying, our customers are paying for, and they, and this project demonstrates that it's going to be cheaper for our customers, this is cheaper than that, that makes it hard for me to say no.
And their current PPA is through 2026, right?
Right.
So actually not doing this will elevate costs for 5 years.
It wouldn't elevate them. They would remain.
They would remain at the, they would elevate them today compared to what approving this
right
will do.
Well, and I'm not even sure, like, quite honestly, how it would work, because the truth is they're probably going ahead with this regardless. So if we say no, then how does that affect our customers? Do they somehow not pay? I don't get how that would even work, Jack. Well, they have to come back in a future rate case and ask us to find it.
They could come back in a future rate case and request recovery for it.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm speaking a little bit off the cuff, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I do probably need a little more time to just make sure that I'm understanding the recovery mechanisms, because hypothetically, like you said, if they're going to go forward and do it regardless and they have a current PPA that now currently is not being used and useful for our customers, it is now being owned by XL Energy, I believe that it would not go through the rider through 2026. Granted, they still have a requirement to provide us that energy, and there would have to be some sort of pricing for that. And I think in other resources, it's generally been the market price as what it's gone to for proxy pricing of it. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of where I'm probably comfortable until I can really sit down and evaluate if that's something we want to look into.
Could they just keep charging our customers the PPA rate?
I'm sure they would make an argument
through
for that.
Fuel class, because that was approved, and even though that wouldn't be what they were, that would be the mechanism they'd use in North Dakota potentially, mm-hmm. because they could.
So the prudency determination also goes along with them being used and useful for our customers. So it's a prudent use of.
Jerry, would you mute, please?
He's getting ready to speak.
Just wait at least till Jack is done.
Sure. It has to be both. So it if it's not being used and useful anymore, the PPA, then arguably they should not be able to get a cost recovery for it if it does not exist anymore.
I see.
So it's found to be a prudent use of money, not used and useful.
even though it was before in the current PPA, in the existing one.
It was found to be prudent.
Right.
But as soon as it ceased being used, it's no longer used and useful.
Mm-hmm. But they'd have to have something for a proxy price. And if it's only a proxy, it's not being used, so wouldn't that be something that they would at least argue for as a proxy to
they could argue for that as a proxy price, and if, say, for example, hypothetically, both jurisdictions went the same route and we both found that the existing PPA was, we would like to go that path, then of course they would just continue to allow it. It's only in this unique circumstance where there are two jurisdictions that this kind of arises, where they might ultimately go forward, because Minnesota and North Dakota and, say, hypothetically, South Dakota would say no, they would just continue to charge the higher price and keep the existing PPA, I imagine.
Well, I think while the savings are pretty modest, I just haven't heard a good argument for letting them pass us by either. It exists. This is a cheaper way of getting the energy from it for our customers than what the current setup is, and I'm not seeing how we argue for maintaining the power purchase agreement. If we deny this, we're kind of arguing in favor of keeping the PPA, I guess.
When would the PPA cease?
I believe it's 2026.
No, if they were, I guess, let me rephrase it. I'm not saying it right. So the repowering of this facility, when would that be completed?
I don't remember either on that. I'm thinking the next couple of years, 21, 22. But that might be something you might want to ask the company.
I'm sure it's in the application.
I'm looking through the app, and I'm guessing it's in there. Now I can't find it. This is the moment where...
The repowered project is expected to qualify for 100% of the existing federal PTC, as it will be placed in service by December 31st of 2020.
Okay. That's what I thought it was in my mind, but I didn't find it as fast as you.
Yeah, the closing of the purchase agreement and the completion of the repowering project is anticipated to occur on or before December 31st, 2020.
Have we done this in the past? When an ADP wasn't granted, but it wasn't denied?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was...
There were cases where the commission has said that it is not granted, an emphasis on advanced determination and prudence. However, the company may bring it back in a future rate proceeding.
Yeah, we didn't find it imprudent, and we just declined to issue an advance determination that it is prudent.
So how would that work with ratepayers?
Well,
they still receive the benefits of this.
To the extent that it would continue under the current PPA, in that event, then they would not receive the benefits of it.
The current PPA.
Right. 2026.
What if the company went ahead, as was mentioned, brought up earlier, what if they went ahead and did this anyway?
They did this anyways, then again, I'd like to look a little bit closer at the mechanisms that are involved, but there may be a subsequent proceeding to set forth the costs. And how that would impact the customers.
If the PPA stayed in place, the actual cost of the PPA would pass through the PGA. Through the purchase power adjustment, I believe. And so if they repowered the facility, you think those costs would be less than they are now.
Well, and this isn't a fair way to look at it, but the reality is I think this is going to happen with or without us, because we make up 6%, 5.5 to 6% of, mm-hmm. in terms of North Dakota's usage. We don't have a large, have a lot of influence, frankly, on these, on whether or not they do it or they don't do it. Our influence is on return on equity and getting recovery. That's the influence that we carry, but on a very small percentage of the project. I just find it so troubling with so many variables. And I know, okay, it's already in operation. It's already generating. It's going to generate at a lower cost for consumers. But that's under the assumption that that's really, though, it's not the way we look at it, and I know we have to look at it this way, but it's not the most comprehensive approach. And we're not looking at future congestion costs. We're not looking at retirement of other facilities, mm-hmm. regardless of the type, whether it's coal or whether it's nuclear or whether sure. it's...
I think that probably is information we could request a supplement for, though, if you would like to evaluate that.
I'll be quiet. Do we in effect set precedents in terms of retirement costs, early retirement costs, and then congestion cost when we say yes to these types of projects? Are we then, to me it seems really hard to say, okay, go ahead and do this, but then later, hey, we've got unforeseen costs that we want and need to pass along or would like to pass along to the ratepayer. And if we say yes at the front end, it seems hard to then say, well, but you can't have that unless it was a condition of the permit.
Sure.
Or not permit, the order.
It seems like your big issue here is what to do with the unamortized depreciation, what's left on the books, and how are they going to collect that, if they're going to collect that.
On what? What facility are we talking to?
On plants that are retiring. We got that same issue with MDU.
But did that even come into this case?
No,
it did not.
No, it's just a sidetrack. When I was listening to you guys talking about unforeseen costs and so forth, and if we're setting precedent on retirement.
Right.
And so our big issue there is what to do with that unamortized depreciation, which is a fair amount of money.
And that most certainly comes into play when we're talking about the, CTs or the combined cycle facilities. But I don't see that as big of an issue with wind farms, because a wind farm really can't replace a coal facility. The energy disbursement, it does disperse some of their energy for sure. But coal's greatest attributes are its dispatchability, and wind doesn't have that.
You're talking
as much.
From a capacity standpoint.
Yeah. Now, on this one, too, the transmission costs that we're seeing rising, that's not a really relevant argument here either, because the transmission is already in place.
Right.
So that one isn't as big of a deal. And quite honestly, to the extent that the transmission is being built for projects that aren't serving our customers, we never get an ADP look at those things. Those just get baked. That's where the MISO and SPP involvement matters, because those costs are baked in without anything ever coming before us.
Yep. And I just want to address a little bit about just taking a pass on it, and they can always come to us for recovery. I've argued for that in cases in the past, but to me they were different than this, and there were cases where I at least believed that it was excessive costs that those projects would have passed on to our customers. I don't have evidence of that in this case. In fact, the evidence suggests to what might be small amounts to actually less cost for at least a few years. And one attribute of being a small population rural state, we're going to have energy companies that operate in more than one state. And to even take a pass on ADPs on cases where the evidence is that they're going to save us money, then what do the other states do on a project that we're very supportive of that is also going to factor into their customers' costs, whether it be the CT that Xcel has committed to build and not very long in the Red River Valley, or a potential penalty involved with not building it, or something else that might get built here in the future? And then do we get into a kind of a tit-for-tat thing where all the states don't participate in these things? I guess, like I say, I'm an advocate for doing that when we have some evidence that it's an excessive cost request. But in this case, I don't see that.
Sure. Chairman Krosh, one thing that it seems like you're pointing out is that you would like to have a broader, more holistic view of this. We do currently have the integrated resource plan that we have. I know staff has been reviewing and working with the company on, is if there really is a specific issue that you feel that would help you make a decision, or that you feel you need to make as you're reviewing the record, we could request that additional information from advocacy as well as the company.
Okay. I don't have an immediate response, but let me think on that.
Sorry, I might be jumping the gun, but is there anything specifically that you as commissioners would like advisory staff to look through? I know there was some discussion of PPA negotiations, and I apologize that I guess I don't have a strong recollection of that, but I could make sure that I pull that to advise you better on I guess the record on that portion. And is there anything else as well that you would like advisory staff to look into?
I do not have any requests or recommendations from this proposed order.
Okay.
I don't either. Okay.
So I did send a draft order around that just accepts the settlement. I don't know if everybody's seen that and looked at it. Has any questions on it?
I don't have any questions on the order. I understand how it was written and to grant approval of this. I have one last question. Hopefully it's the last one, because we're just about done anyway. On the company's application, Jerry, on page 10, I can read it to you, Jerry, as well, if you want. I heard him say he's looking for it, even though he's muted. Now he just said, go bison. I'm lip reading. Sure, that's what
you're mind reading, I think.
Okay, I'll just start talking as you're looking, but the base case includes an assumption that the wind energy purchased under the existing PPA is replaced after the contract term ends in December 2026 with a generic wind PPA beginning at $38.81 per megawatt hour. That's a heck of a lot different than the 1.8 you cited at the beginning of the work session, Jerry. That does not seem like a reasonable base case assumption to put in place when I hear 1.8.
Well, Jerry's 1.8 was a springtime.
Right.
I don't know if that was a month or a quarter, but that is certainly not a multi-year average.
Right. But isn't it at 2.4, 2.5, though, is generally the ballpark number that I've always heard? So the base case number here is going to help support, you know, the argument that this should be approved, you know, versus future costs. That just seems way off track. At 38,
I don't know where they
versus 25, yeah, or 26, because, you know, you hear of 22 to 24, 25. You're right. The 1.8, that's a springtime. It's more of a one-off. Well, it is a one-off-ish. But 38.81, when is the market even, when's the last time the market hit? Well, I take that back. I've seen spikes, but in an average month, when's it ever hit 38.81? In recent memory, anyway.
It's been a couple of years. I don't know how old this contract is. I can't remember when they entered into it. But there would have likely been an escalation of the price over the contract term. And so it could be that the 3.8 is what we would expect to pay at the time of the 2025 or 6, if we keep the contract in place as is.
They describe it as the generic wind price used in their integrated resource plan, base case for their integrated resource plan.
Okay. So same thing then. The IRP is a couple of years old. I would think that when you see your next IRP, that number might be lower. But, you know, they're also looking at the expiration of the production tax credit, too.
Which isn't going to end anytime soon.
They've been trying, but...
Okay. Well, I think that's not just for this, but for all of the cases that we look at, I think that's a number that we have to vet. And is that still realistic, given the fact that PTCs and ITCs are just extended to, you know, for another year, which means there's a 10-year runway on new build. Plus, as you mentioned, Jerry, and we all know, most of these are going to be repowered like crazy before the next expiration date of the PTC. So it's not 2026 to me. It's minimum 2031. If it ends in, does that make sense?
I didn't follow that step, but I will say, though, that while that number seems high, I don't know exactly how they arrived at that as the potential renewal cost of a PPA, advocacy staff's range all ended up a net benefit, mm-hmm. even at the low end. And as we talked about earlier, although it's marginal, even at the very low end, there was nothing to see that keeping the PPA was better for the consumers than doing this acquisition.
Yeah, and another thing is that it wasn't that long ago when 3.8 cents wasn't a bad price on wind generation, and it has decreased substantially here in the last few years, and actually that's what happened to Mericord. But I don't think we need to get into that.
I just don't think we can use 38.81. I don't know that it changes this mm-hmm. application, but if I were to see 38.81, and well, that's a base case
sure.
assumption in terms of the cost, you know, in 2026 for wind, when with the extension, the PTCs are going to heavily influence the cost, you know, they're going to drive the cost of wind energy down at least over the next decade. And there's, with that in play, I just don't believe 38.81 is a reasonable, realistic number
sure.
when it's going to go to at least 2030, 2031 if you tack mm-hmm. 10 years on from today, and probably 2032 safely.
And I think everybody would agree with that.
Okay, just something to keep in mind. I don't have anything else for Commissioner
Fedorchak,
Commissioner Hissman. Jack, do you have Jerry, anything you'd want to throw in at the end?
I'd just like to request what direction that the commission would have for us.
I guess I don't have a change in direction.
Sure.
Well, and actually, we're at 215 on MDU.
Mm-hmm.
But the great unknown is,
mm-hmm.
well, they can't. In all likelihood, well, not even all likelihood, they can't get out of the existing contract until 2026. That's the reality. If the company repowered, produced energy at a more reasonable rate, they're still going to say no. And there's a signed PPA, we'll take the higher rate. But we're also under the assumption that someone else wouldn't buy it and repower it. We can't really take that into account anyway, but realistically, this is going to be repowered over the next, you know, within the next year and under this scenario before the end of this year. It just seems like there's going to be plenty of opportunities.
Do we know how the Minnesota Commission has acted on this? I'd be interested in an update on that,
I'd be happy to
where they're at in their review, and same with South Dakota, actually.
Sure. Yeah, I'll definitely do that and provide you an update.
That'd be great, Jack.
In May, they hadn't taken action yet. I remember asking the question.
Okay. It seems that if it's not a good deal, they'd be digging pretty hardly into that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if they deny it and we approved it, they're not going to go through with it either.
Right. You mean if we approve it and they deny it?
And
yeah,
so
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I don't have any other direction.
Okay.
Any altering direction? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll provide this information to you, and then I believe it's Commissioner Crosius's portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And,
okay.
I'd be interested in that, and then I'm open to, you know, an order.
Sure. Draft order.
A draft order.
Right. Jerry, which I believe Jerry's already provided.
Future.
But it could be.
I thought Jerry had distributed that.
He did, and he provided a preliminary order for discussion today, and it approves the settlement agreement.
Okay. Well, I think we're wrapped up with this particular. So, Jack, you're good. Jerry, anything else that you have for questions of us?
I don't think so. I should be good, too.
Sure. Okay.
And after our review, then I'll probably follow up with the commissioners and see which path we'd like to go. Okay.
Sounds good.
I thought the order itself, if that's the direction we choose to go, was written fine. I didn't have anything specific in there.
Good.
All right. Well, thank you for indulging me in my questions and some of the thoughts I had that I wanted to get out there. So, with that said, this work session on case number PU 19-310 is concluded. Thank you, everyone.